These guys were getting into it, so I was going to go ahead and sing a song. That's why they left. I walked into that one. Yeah, you guys are good. You ever notice they really get into it after we sing? Not while we're singing. Well, I told them that I don't know how many times, and then they get into it when we're done. It's the other way around, right? You know? All right, well, we're in Proverbs 8. It's nice to be back with you, but it's also nice to be gone. It's nice to have people like Alan step in and others, Randy and Tucker and Jim and Mark and others, hopefully in the future, that I won't name at this moment. But so thank you for stepping in and for doing that in the future as well. You know that my wife struggles with some of her physical issues, and I've just decided that when she is able to leave, we're gone. So she can get a different venue and catch her breath and get out and get out and kind of get in a different environment. So I may do a little more of that, depending on her situation. But it's nice to have guys to step in to teach the word. I think it's also healthy for our fellowship to kind of expand that a bit and let God speak through other people to you. And maybe one day, hopefully, you can pray with me about this, is that I would love to see my ministry expand a bit and have some groups in the States where I could serve. Not many, one or two would be fine, and be gone a few weekends out of the year to invest in those people as well, similar to what I do overseas. So it's nice to have a group of teachers that can step in and fill in that gap should that happen. Well, we're in Proverbs 8, and I've entitled my thoughts, "Live Wisely Because Wisdom is Valuable," and chapter 8 is about the call of wisdom. And you can see it in verse 1. Does wisdom call? Well, of course. It's a rhetorical question. Wisdom is calling all the time, just that people aren't listening. And understanding, lift up her voice. Well, yes, understanding is a product of wisdom, but, it lifts up its voice figuratively and displays itself so that people can gain understanding. Constantly lifting up her voice. And so we have this call to wisdom. It's very much like chapter 1. It's almost like Solomon is kind of rebooting and starting over now. For 7 chapters, he talked about the call to wisdom. He said, now you need wisdom here, you need wisdom there, you need wisdom in this, you need wisdom to deal with that. And then he comes back full circle now, but he's not really starting over. He's kind of building on what he's just said. Even though he's calling us back to wisdom, he's building on all the information he's previously given in the first 7 chapters. And so this repetition is intentional. It's meant to drive home the idea of the absolute essential need for wisdom. And a lot of this is not necessarily new stuff he's going to say in this chapter, but it's put in a unique way. It's kind of the same thing said in a different way, giving it a new emphasis. And there are 3 or 4 things he says. He's talking about the usefulness of wisdom. So let me begin in the first 3 verses. Wisdom is useful everywhere in life. Now he says in verse 1, wisdom advances herself to exhibit her attractions. Out in the open, not lurking in the streets, in secret. See what he says? She's calling out, understanding, lifting her voice. This is the idea that wisdom is out there in the streets trying to get people's attention, not hide in the corners, hitting a person here and there. Because wisdom wants to be useful for everyone and is found beneficial everywhere in life. So why wouldn't you want to hear its call? Why wouldn't you want to gain its understanding? That's the point. Wisdom is almost making this personal appeal about itself. Listen, you got to hear me. You got to take my counsel. In verse 2, her crying out is everywhere. Notice it's in the heights, it's beside the way, it's beside the gate, it's at the openings of the city, it's at the entrances where the people gather together to buy and sell in the city, to settle their disputes, to determine proper decisions, he says. You know, on top of the heights, the paths meet, takes her stand, the gates, at the opening, the entrance, she cries out. The idea is that wisdom is standing in the most public place in the city. And where disputes are settled, where judges make decisions, and all of it requires wisdom, and wisdom is theirs. Wisdom is saying, I'm useful on the ground. I'm useful where you live, where you work, where you raise your family. I'm found in the streets. So wisdom is about bringing chaos to order. It's about bringing our randomness back to regularity. It's about removing our confusion and replacing it with understanding. Now, maturity must be built upon wisdom. There is no maturity without wisdom. But the two are not the same. Maturity requires creativity. Wisdom requires regularity. Wisdom is moving from chaos to order, from random and disorder and confusion to living in light of the way things usually are most of the time in life. And that's useful for everyone in life. So why wouldn't you want it, wisdom is saying? Why do you want to throw my inspiration and understanding out the window? Why do you want to be foolish? Why do you want to play the percentages? Why do you want to ignore how things usually work out? Why do you want to just kind of be skeptical about the regular cycles of life and how things usually happen and think that you can carve out a new niche and play the percentages and randomly pursue disorder without heart? So wisdom is useful everywhere in life, it says in the first three verses. But here's how wisdom is useful everywhere in life. Beginning of verse 4, wisdom is useful to secure the understanding to live life. That's why. Wisdom is useful to secure the understanding to live life. Notice in verses 4 and 5, listen to wisdom's wisdom. That's the point here. Would you listen to my wisdom? Notice, to you, O men, I call. My voice is to the sons of men. Naive ones, discern prudence. Fools, discern wisdom. Why wouldn't you want to listen to wisdom's wisdom? And wisdom is seen here personified as inviting all classes of people to embrace her. First to the sons of men in verse 4, which refers to all of humankind. And then in verse 5, to the simple and the foolish. And to the simple and foolish, you will gain prudence and you will gain understanding if you embrace wisdom. So, wisdom is useful no matter where you find yourself in life. If for some reason you are currently naive about something, then the understanding wisdom supplies is needful. If you're foolish at this point in life, and the chaos you have created because of that, it can be improved upon with wisdom's counsel. Wisdom is always valuable, no matter your life circumstance. You may be in the most foolish place you could possibly be today in life. I want you to know that wisdom says, hear me, listen to me, apply me, and it will be the best solution for you. Wisdom, listen to wisdom's wisdom. It's the way to secure understanding, to live life. And then in 6 to 9, he says, wisdom is protection from foolish chaos. Look at verse 6. It begins with, listen. Listen. And we've heard that so many times in the first 7 chapters of Proverbs. First, wisdom declares herself to have noble things to say in verse 6. You know, wisdom is personified as opening her mouth. Notice, and the opening of my lips produces right things. She speaks only what is excellent, that's noble, and what's upright. Wisdom is not treacherous, unless you're a fool. Listening to wisdom will never get you into trouble, at least bad trouble.
Verse 7, the information wisdom conveys is always reliable. He says, my mouth will utter truth. Hey, when I open my mouth, I say right things, and what I say is true. You can count on it. Wisdom tells the truth in the sense of what is firm and dependable. This conveyance of truth makes wickedness detestable to wisdom. Notice what he says at the end of verse 7. And wickedness is an abomination to my lips. You can count on it. If you discern wisdom in the path of your life today and you put it to use, wisdom will never fail you. Wisdom is not going to lead you down a path of destruction. It will never produce evil. You never have to wonder, if this is the wisest choice, should I make it? What might happen? What might happen will never be evil. It won't be treacherous. It won't be destructive. Verse 8, everything wisdom teaches appeals to what is righteous. He says, all the utterances of my mouth, when wisdom opens its mouth, personified as, you're actually going to listen to me this time? You're going to do that? Well, notice, all the utterances of my mouth are not unrighteous, they're all righteous. There's nothing crooked or perverted in them. The idea here is there's no hidden agendas. You know, wisdom isn't going to come around and bite you later. There's no deception when wisdom speaks your mind. Wisdom cannot conceive of guidance that's perverted. It's not possible. Verse 9, all of her counsel is in plain view of truth. It's faultless. Notice, when I open my mouth, all I say is straightforward to him who understands and right to those who find knowledge. Wisdom is saying it is intelligible and it is precise to those who have understanding, to those who, of course, wish to receive its counsel. Now, there's a fool, we're going to learn about the fool eventually, who knows all about wisdom but refuses its counsel. And so they're going to self-destruct. But if you want its counsel and you hear its mouth being open, you're going to get truth. You're going to get the way things actually are. You're going to get wise counsel, no hidden agendas. Wisdom is not out to get you. You know, isn't it interesting how Satan perverts things? We have the way of wisdom in front of us in a particular life circumstance we face, and we choose otherwise. I've done that so many times in my life, I'm embarrassed and ashamed by it. How many times have I ignored wisdom to play the percentages, to take the gamble, and I've lost? And that's the nature of the beast. But wisdom is having a firm grasp of the obvious. It's the skill for recognizing life's regular things. It's the way things usually are most of the time. And the wise man knows what to expect. He has understanding about... He's secured understanding about life. He or she thinks in terms of the regular patterns of life. So wisdom is a skill for understanding life according to its regular things. Wisdom can be counted upon to live life skillfully. So wisdom is available everywhere in life and for everything in life. And when you gain wisdom, you secure the understanding to live life. That's what he says in verses 4 to 9. But you gain something else. Beginning in verse 10, wisdom is useful for acquiring knowledge about life. It secures understanding to live life, but it also acquires knowledge about life. And this is an interesting argument that Solomon gives. The argument begins in verse 10 and 11. Wisdom has incomparable value for life. Incomparable value for life. Susan mentioned this a little bit in her scripture reading. And the point of this invitation is to embrace wisdom. To embrace wisdom is the instruction it delivers and the knowledge it furnishes. Notice verse 10. Take my instruction and my knowledge. Take it. Receive it, listen to it, absorb it. And both wisdom and knowledge, the instruction and knowledge that come with wisdom, he says, are more valuable than the most precious metals, silver and precious gold. Notice, not silver, rather than choicest gold. You can have the most choice gold, the most unblemished gold in your hands, which is the most valuable resource on this side of the grave, and yet true wealth, he says, derives not from those, but from the qualities of instruction and knowledge associated with wisdom. Now, the only way, seriously, the only way we could arrive at that conclusion is if we perceive eternal things to be more advantageous. Alright? That's the bottom line. A foolish person could never consider this to be true. A foolish person would hold unblemished gold in his or her hand and look at wisdom next to him or her and could never connect the dots. Because eternal things are not valuable to earthly people. And so this is not just counterculture, it's counterintuitive. It gives us an idea of how God thinks. And God says what's more valuable than anything else in the universe is wisdom, embedded in the fear of God, rather than the most precious metals that you could ever hold. Wisdom is not just incomparably valuable. Wisdom has practical value if we're going to acquire knowledge about life. And he begins that in verse 12. Notice, I, wisdom. There's wisdom again being personified. Wisdom claims to lodge with prudence here. Notice, I, wisdom, dwell with prudence. Well, what's prudence? That sounds so prude. I mean, the last thing we want to be in this generation is a prude. Well, prudence is a good thing. It's not a bad thing. We've turned it into a bad thing. But prudence is correct knowledge in unique situations. You know, have you ever been able to be in a unique situation? You got several things converging at once, and you have the intuitive knack to know how to deal with it. That's prudence. A lot of people don't have prudence. If there are several things that converge at once and they create a new scenario, they don't have the ability and the tact and the intuitiveness to apply the right solution. They get bent out of shape about it. They throw anger at it, rage at it. They run away from it. They're fearful of it. But a person who has prudence discerns with shrewdness and farsightedness the ability to carve out a wise path in life in the midst of this situation. And they apply the right remedy based in wisdom. And wisdom says, I dwell with that. That's what I dwell with. I don't dwell with perpetual chaotic disorder. I don't dwell with that which destroys and self-destructs. I dwell with prudence. And says, wisdom says, I find knowledge and discretion. These are attributes of somebody who has chosen to embrace wisdom in life. And notice, this parallels in verse 13 with the fear of the Lord, which hates evil. When you gain wisdom based on the fear of God, it leads to a rejection of what's evil and proud and arrogant and distorted. Notice, the fear of the Lord is to hate evil, pride and arrogance in the evil way, in the perverted mouth I hate. Wisdom doesn't go there to solve problems. Wisdom doesn't look at life situations and apply what is evil and proud and arrogant and destructive. Okay? Pride, by the way, is independence from God rather than dependence upon God. That's the difference between pride and humility. Pride is independence from God. Humility is dependence upon God. God says, develop humility. The world says, promote pride. And everything in society is about pride. It's about cutting our connections to God. That's why evolution, for instance, is a product of worldly wisdom, because it's a way to sever ourselves from God. That's why things like abortion and same-sex marriage are rebellious. They are ways to sever us from any connection to God. Anything that God's instituted or associated with Him, worldly wisdom is against, and that's pride. Pride is independence from God. And Anybody living in opposition to the Word of God, the only thing they're going to do is harm themselves. They're going to harm themselves in this life and on into eternity. You know, we ought to be sober-minded about worldly wisdom that is so quick to snip itself from any association with the God of the universe, because those people are doing nothing but harming themselves. And it's a shame. Notice in verses 14 to 16 that counsel and sound judgment and understanding, all of which form a powerful force, by the way, is associated with wisdom's embrace. Notice, counsel is mine, sound wisdom. I am understanding. Power is mine. Did you know that there is power in meekness? Meekness is not weakness. Moses was the meekest man in the world, and yet none of us would say he wasn't a powerful, influential leader. And wisdom says, counsel and wisdom and understanding, power is mine in that. Leaders, by the way, this ties us into what he says in verses 15 and 16. This is especially noticeable with those in power. Notice he says, by me kings reign, rulers decree, princes rule, and judges judge. Those who reign and lead and govern, if their leadership is derived from wisdom, think about the benefit that is for everybody. The unfortunate thing is we don't have a lot of examples of that in history, do we? We don't have a lot of examples of that in contemporary society. Leaders most often want power and grab for it and salivate for it, not necessarily to use it to benefit people. But if it ever happens, he says, you can see the powerful effects of wisdom displayed through government, through leadership, by those who rule rightly. So wisdom is wanting us to know it's not on a pedestal, it's down to earth. It's where the rubber meets the road. Wisdom is the difference maker. Wisdom is useful for leadership because of the wider influence leaders have in the lives of the community they serve. A wise leader, he says in verse 16, knows this, and his or her rule is judicious. This is one of the really, really profound, interesting things about the coming rule of Jesus Christ. If you are a student of Bible prophecy, then you will understand that when the curtain comes down on this dispensation, which will happen at the end of the tribulation, the curtain is raised on a new one when Christ is literally reigning on the earth. And as far as I know, it will be a literal reign of 1,000 years, and we will rule and reign with him. But it will be a wise rule. And what he says in verses 15 and 16 will be true about Christ's rule. Wisdom will be the basis of his rule, and thus the entire globe will benefit judiciously from that rule. And so this ultimately looks to the rule of Christ, who will rule as a worldwide ruler in wisdom. Now, with all this in mind then, wisdom rewards when applied to life. You know, wisdom is useful because it secures understanding about living life, and wisdom is useful for acquiring knowledge about how life works. And if that's true, verses 17 and 21, he tells us wisdom gives rewards when it's applied to your life. Notice in verse 17, I love those who love me. This is wisdom speaking. And those who diligently seek me will find me. But listen, wisdom does not play hide and go seek. Okay? Wisdom doesn't say, hey, I'm over here, see if you can find me. Now I'm hiding over here. Let's play a little game. Wisdom says, if you want me, you can find me. As a matter of fact, James says, if you need wisdom, what should you do? Ask God, and he will what? Give abundantly. Wisdom declares that she will reward those who love her. All of the attributes of wisdom enumerated in this chapter are accessible to those who seek it. But wisdom must be sought. Wisdom must be sought and found. Wisdom must be pursued to be enjoyed. And the point here is to discover wisdom and all of the benefits associated with it. Verses 18 and 19, the outcome of acquiring wisdom is described as both riches and honor, verse 18, and fruit, verse 19. Notice, riches and honor are with me. Verse 19, my fruit is better than gold, than pure gold. The former, riches and honor, lead to enduring wealth. Notice, enduring wealth and righteousness, verse 18, are with wisdom. And godly living is a major benefit from acquiring wisdom. And notice the latter produces yields. Verse 19, my fruit is better than gold and pure gold, and my yield than choicest silver. Here we had choicest gold, now we have choicest silver. So the point is, no matter how pure those metals are, the most precious metals possible, neither one of them compare to the benefits of wisdom. Wisdom is far superior when applied to life to that which is regarded on earth as the most precious possession ever. Verses 20 and 21, notice wisdom has a walk and a path. I walk in the way of righteousness in the midst of the paths of justice. In other words, wisdom struts to righteousness and justice. And these paths are prosperous and endowed with wealth, he says, verse 21. Notice the interesting thought in verse 21, to endow those who love me with wealth, that I may fill their treasuries. Let me tell you what I think he's saying. I think Solomon is saying that the practical value of this insight is that material substance is replenishable. Not for everyone all the time, but because of the skill of a wise person, he or she has the skill to maintain that wealth. Wisdom is capable of enriching your life with significant value throughout your life. That's the point. So pursue it. Here's the final thought. Wisdom is everywhere. It's useful everywhere in life. Wisdom is useful to secure an understanding to live life. It's useful to acquire knowledge about life. But he concludes the whole idea here in verse 22 to 36 with this. Wisdom is useful since by wisdom God crafted life. God crafted life with wisdom. In verses 22 to 26, wisdom preceded creation. He says in verse 22 to 23 that the motivation for embracing wisdom is her existence before the creation of the world. Before occurs five times in this section. And what this indicates is that wisdom was present when God crafted the universe. He says in verse 22, the Lord possessed me at the beginning of his way, before his works of old, from everlasting I was established. From the beginning, from the earliest times of the earth. So wisdom was before creation and during the creative act. It was around. Now this personified wisdom derives from God's essential being. And as such, it's unlike the rest of God's creation, which came into existence outside of him as the creative act of God. It is this wisdom derived from God's essential nature that is to be embraced in life. And God has revealed it to us so we may live consistent with it. And then in verses 24 to 26, notice the reiteration that wisdom was established before creation. Notice, before the waters were separated, making clouds and oceans on the second day, verse 24, I was brought forth. And before the dry land appeared on the third day, verse 25, wisdom existed and operated. Before the mountains were settled, before the hills, I was brought forth. Wisdom was established or appointed even before dirt and dust. And even before the land masses were in place, verse 26, while he has not yet made the earth and the fields, nor the first dust of the earth. Think about that. Wisdom preceded creation. But in 27 to 29, wisdom existed during the creative act of God. So it existed before creation, but it was also around during the creative act. Notice you have the New American Standard, verse 27, when he established, when he inscribed, verse 28, when he made, when the springs, verse 29, when he set, when he marked. We've got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 times. When. Wisdom wants you to know that when God was involved in the creative act of the universe, wisdom was right there. That's how significant it is. Not only did wisdom exist before creation, verse 23, I was established, verse 24 and 25, I was brought forth. Wisdom was a craftsman at God's side when he created the world. Verse 27, I was there, wisdom says. Verse 30, I was beside him. Wisdom was used to assemble the entire universe from the very beginning. And as such, it makes wisdom essential for living within that universe. It makes sense, doesn't it? That if wisdom was the foundation for the universe, that wisdom is also the glue that keeps it together. Ultimately, the New Testament connects this wisdom to Jesus Christ. Jesus Christ himself holds the entire universe together. If Jesus decided for creation no longer to exist, it would completely unravel. So, notice, God's wisdom had a hand in establishing the heavens apart from the earth, verse 27, in creating the earth in a sphere, verse 27, in establishing the atmosphere before any living thing was created, verse 28, in creating the sea with a predetermined shoreline, with the land in one place and the sea in another, verse 28 and 29. Think about it. Wisdom determined all of this. Creation was not the construct of a chaotic act. Creation was an ordered act, which is the essential basis of wisdom in life. So creation is the product of wise construction, not chaotic chance events. Evolution teaches that all that exists in the world is the product of chaotic chance events. Proverbs tells us that creation was the product of wise construct by God himself in an ordered way embedded in the entire universe. Finally, then, wisdom's claim to reward is credible, isn't it? That's what verses 30 through 36 are about. If wisdom is so basic to the universe that it's essential for living, consistent with the values and ethics embedded within it, it's absolutely essential. Notice verse 30. That I was beside him as a master workman. I was daily his delight, rejoicing always before him, rejoicing the world is earth, and having my delight in the sons of men. You know what wisdom is saying here? God was very happy during the creative act. You notice what is the constant mantra in the creative act in Genesis 1 and 2? And it was what? It was good. God created, and it was good. God created, and it was good. Well, wisdom is saying, if I was there, and God rejoiced. This wasn't just some mental exercise God was into. This was God personally engaged in the creation of the universe. And it brought immense joy to him. And the crowning construct of that creation, verse 31, and having my delight in the sons of men. That refers to the creation of Adam and Eve. As God formed Adam out of the dust, and he created the woman from the womb of the man, God smiled. This was an awesome creative act of God that he rejoiced in. That being the case, verse 33 through 35, here's wisdom again with its appeal. Heed my instruction. Watch daily at my gates, waiting at my doorposts. Verse 35, for he who finds me finds life and obtains favor from the Lord. Heed her instruction. Watch and wait. Don't forestall her. Blessing is mentioned twice here as a reward. It comes from following wisdom eagerly and passionately. Finally, the warning in verse 36. But he who sins against me injures himself. All those who hate me love death. You know, here's the difference. Wisdom asks what is closest to God's heart, and then discovers the blessing and favor of the Lord. Verse 36, fools ask what they can get away with and still hope to have that blessing. God's goodwill is only available to the wise. Rejecting wisdom results in harm and death. And people have two choices in life. So what? Well, first of all, the only way to avoid the destruction of a chaotic life is the application of the wisdom of God. Chaos is unavoidable otherwise. All you've got now is just damage control. That's all you got. Let's try to control the damage because I don't want to pursue wisdom. And understand something about life. Life trends toward chaos. If you own a house, you know that to be true. It's perpetual chaos. We cannot control our circumstances. We cannot determine how people will manage their relationship with us. Potential chaos stalks us on this side of the grave. And spurning wisdom only sets you up to self-destruct. And then secondly, wisdom must be cultivated. If we learn anything from this passage, that's true. It doesn't just show up all of a sudden when you need it. If you do not already have it, you will most likely contribute to the chaos you're confronted with. We're too easily distracted and too willing to play the percentages, hoping that we can get a handle on our chaos without the hard path of ordered living. However, wisdom requires that we take responsibility, not handouts. And most people are unwilling to do that. Well, wisdom is valuable. But it's up to you to believe that to be true and to put it to work in your life. Let's pray. The gracious Father, you speak and you don't stutter. You lay it out as it is, and we can see it for what it's worth, and now the choice is ours to take wisdom and to make it our pal. May we be committed to do that because of the instruction of this chapter in Jesus' name.